This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, environmental health news writer Brian Benkowski tells us why researchers are concerned about the bald eagle in Michigan, despite a relatively stable population. But first, it may seem like the 2014 election cycle wrapped up not so long ago. There are still ballot issues and elections for local offices that will be decided in 2015. But Michigan lawmakers are already thinking about 2016, specifically when the state's Republican presidential primary will be held. The state Senate has approved moving the primary to March 15th of next year, when several other Midwestern states are also planning to vote to determine the delegates for presidential nominees. We're going to discuss the jockeying for position in 2016 with Western Michigan University political science professor John Clark. Thank you very much for being here.
Always a pleasure.
So part of the reason that this date has been picked is that so far Illinois and Missouri have selected March 15th. There are some other states in the Midwest which are considering it. So this could be a Midwestern primary, or it's being called the Big Ten primary. Is there some research and some evidence that shows that there is a real value in having some sort of regional primary for the states themselves?
Potentially so. And I think that for the people who are encouraging their state lawmakers to make these kinds of decisions, they see what they think at least is the value. But the fact of the matter is that these things oftentimes don't work out as intended. And with nominations in particular, there's a whole combination of factors that come into play. The rest of the calendar, what other states decide to do in terms of scheduling their own contests, the mix of candidates at any particular point in time, because remember, with nominations, you start out with a whole bunch of candidates, and eventually you get down to one for each party that gets the party's nomination. And so the mix of candidates at any particular time comes into play. And then there's all kinds of other things, like the amount of money that they have and the expectations that people have for them as they enter each of the contests. So we're talking about a process with an awful lot of moving parts, only one of which is the calendar. And that means that there's an awful lot of guesswork that goes into what makes a state have more impact in an election cycle relative to other states.
And that brings to mind Michigan 2008, when the primary and caucus were moved up. The national parties said that the delegates would not be seated. And on the Democratic side, the candidates didn't even come to Michigan to campaign.
That's right. They completely ignored the state. And there was still a contest. The state said, this is when we're going to have it. Voters could still participate. But it didn't matter, because the reason that we have these contests is, of course, to select who the nominees are. But the way that we do that is through the delegate selection process. So the actual decision gets made at the national party conventions. We're selecting the delegates to those conventions, and each party has its rules about how that gets done. But essentially, Michigan lawmakers said, we don't care about that. And so the state party said, well, then we don't really care about Michigan. You know, you've made a decision, and as a result of your decision, you're sort of out of the game. And on the Republican side, the penalty wasn't as severe, and so Republican candidates did come. Eventually, the state's delegates got seated, so in some ways it was not a big deal. But on the Democratic side, it completely removed Michigan voters, Michigan Democratic voters, from a process that proved to be extremely close. We kind of forget oftentimes that Hillary Clinton was the front runner going into that cycle, as she is again now, for 2016. And it really wasn't until the very last contest that Barack Obama clinched the Democratic nomination. That was ancient history in some ways, but it's in some ways telling. If Michigan had played by the rules in 2008, we very well could have been, you know, one of the decider states much earlier in the process, simply because of the fact that the nomination had to run its entire course before we knew who was going to win.
And of course, we don't know how this would have played out, but it is possible that Michigan could have thrown this nomination the other way, perhaps to Hillary Clinton, or made it even more of a jump ball where there could have been some sort of a floor fight at the Democratic convention.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So if a state is looking at the option of being part of a regional primary, or as I guess is the case of some state lawmakers in the House, they're saying, well, they want to move up even earlier. Is there the benefit of perhaps being alone, that some Tuesday in March or February is Michigan's primary as opposed to the Midwestern or Big Ten primary?
That certainly is a possibility. You know, states want attention during the nominating process for a couple reasons. One could be because the issues that are of greatest concern to voters might become prominent issues in the campaign. They might force candidates to take positions that are favorable to that state, or it might mean that a candidate that has positions that are already more favorable to the state might end up getting the nomination. The other thing is that when the campaign comes to your state, there's a lot of potential revenue that comes with it. So that the candidates themselves are here, their campaigns are here, they're spending money. The news media is here, they're spending money. The candidates and groups are running campaign ads, and that creates additional revenue streams for the state and so on and so forth. How do you get that attention? Well, one way to get it is to be one of the deciders. And oftentimes, the deciders are the states that go early or relatively early. But these decisions are made in different states by different groups. Sometimes it's the state party, sometimes it's the legislature, sometimes both. And they make those decisions within the constraints that are imposed by the national parties. And so because one state moves, that might trigger several other states to move. And so for a number of years, one of the concerns that people that studied this stuff paid attention to was what we call the front-loading problem. That is, everybody wants to be first in line, and so we end up with nobody first because we're all at the start of the process and it becomes a big jumble. And there are lots of reasons why that's probably not a good way to conduct these nominations.
And why the national parties have stepped in and tried to say at least these first four states are not going to be jumped by anybody else, which would be Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, and Nevada.
Yeah. And so those states are sometimes referred to as the carve-out states because each of the national parties, both the Democratic National Party and the Republican Party, have given them kind of special status in the process. There's some really good reasons for that, but there are a whole lot of other states that are somewhat envious of that and may choose to jump into that early mix, even though the state parties have told them that they can't. As Michigan did in 2008, Florida in 2012, sometimes there's a penalty to pay for being naughty. Sometimes it's worth it, sometimes it's not.
Well, and do these states perhaps rationalize that that's the cost of doing business for being one of the early states and that the delegates themselves may be sort of a side issue, that what you really want is candidates in your state talking about issues which are important to your voters and how the delegates get sorted, that's going to be figured out somewhere down the line.
Exactly. And again, oftentimes it's state lawmakers who are making these decisions about the calendar, and they're not really the ones that have to deal with the consequences in any meaningful way. So being early or at least being a decider means your state's likely to get more attention. The other thing, of course, that would give your state more attention is if you're the only one on a particular day. And so with these carve-out states, these states that have the opportunity to be the early ones in the process, that schedule gets set in the states again, but oftentimes in such a way as we have Iowa, and then there's a little bit of time before we have New Hampshire, and then there's a little bit of time before we have Nevada, and then there's a little bit of time before we have South Carolina. By spreading it out a little bit, it increases the impact of each of those states. And if they're the only state that has a contest on that day, then all of the attention gets focused on that state. So in some ways, choosing a date that's in the middle of March after lots of other states have gone potentially diminishes the impact of Michigan's nomination contests, potentially. And being on the same day as a whole bunch of other states potentially weakens the impact of Michigan's contests. Now, having said that, there's at least one scenario, and probably many more, where Michigan's impact could be increased under those circumstances. So let's say that there is this so-called Big Ten primary, that all of these different states individually come to agreement that March 15th, which is, you know, a Tuesday in the middle of March, beware the Ides of March, but it's Tuesday in the middle of March, where potentially at least you could have Michigan and Ohio and Indiana and Wisconsin and Illinois and Missouri all holding their contests on the same day. Now, right now, Illinois and Missouri are the only two states that have scheduled their primaries for that day. And of course, even those dates could change for Illinois and Missouri. But let's say potentially that is the lineup. There's at least a possibility that Scott Walker, the governor of Wisconsin, is going to be a candidate. At this point, I would say it
seems like he's probably in the race.
Probability, yeah. And there's at least some likelihood that somebody like John Kasich, who's the governor of Ohio, could also get into the mix. Now, they're different politicians. They've got some different ideas, but in some ways, they represent what we might call the governing wing of the Republican Party, along with some other candidates that people may have heard of, like Jeb Bush, Chris Christie, possibly Bobby Jindal, who's the governor of Louisiana. These are folks who have gubernatorial experience and can bring to the campaign some evidence as solving problems. They're not necessarily the most ideological, but in many ways, they're sort of the pragmatic Republicans. Well, that's a whole bunch of them. And if both Kasich and Walker are in the race at that time, then it's likely most folks aren't going to campaign very heavily in Wisconsin because they figure, why run against
Walker's home state?
He's going to win.
Yeah.
They're not going to campaign very heavily in Ohio because why campaign against Kasich? It's his home state. That leaves a state like Michigan very well positioned, potentially at least, to sort out who it is among that wing of the Republican Party that's going to move forward in the process. But it also creates a scenario, potentially, where voters who are leaning toward the governing wing of the Republican Party might split their vote across four or five
different candidates,
which means that a candidate who doesn't represent that wing of the party might win Michigan's primary with a relatively small percentage of the vote and sort of catapult themselves far ahead in the process, well beyond what their actual performance would indicate.
One of the things that came out from 2008 for people who follow politics closely, to quote, I believe, a book by Jeff Greenfield, People Who Call C-SPAN on New Year's Eve, is that...
That wasn't me, by the way. It may have sounded like me, but it wasn't me.
Is that the way delegates are awarded is a big part of the process here. And many people who've studied it closely say that now President Obama's team knew how to play that game better in terms of working the caucus states as opposed to the primary states. But I'm wondering if you have this regional primary with a lot of states in, does the awarding of delegates then become something of a science where you want to figure out how to award them in such a way that your state might be viewed as more valuable than a neighboring state?
Potentially so. And again, the calendar and the scheduling can be pretty arcane for most folks. Once we start looking at the rules that govern the actual delegate allocations, boy, that's some really inside baseball when you get to that point. But that's one of the things that is, again, affected by the rules set down by the national party. But the decisions themselves are made within the states, typically not state legislatures at that point. Typically, it's the state parties that are making those decisions. But there's quite a range of different possibilities in terms of how delegates can be allocated across the candidates in a particular primary. The Democrats are a little more structured in that sense, in that they don't allow for the candidate who wins the state to get all of that state's delegates necessarily. It could work out that way, but they're more likely to be spreading those delegates across a multiple number of candidates than the Republicans are. The Republicans do allow for winner-take-all, not up front, but as you move later in the process. And so it certainly is the case that potentially among states that have contests on the same day, the way in which they allocate delegates would affect the strategies that the potential candidates for the nomination would use in those states. So that, for instance, if a state allocates its delegates to whoever wins the entire state, then there's probably going to be a strategy that suggests, okay, we want to focus on where the voters are. What are the big media markets? We'll focus all of our attention there. But if you win, say, congressional districts, and so whoever wins the congressional district gets a delegate
delegates,
or
yeah.
whatever the number of delegates is, you know, sort of all of those for each district, then that means that you wouldn't just go to the big media markets, at least not necessarily. You might also go to some of those districts where there really aren't a lot of voters from your party, but they get the same number of delegates to the national convention. And so all of a sudden, candidates start having to strategize to figure out where it is that they can invest their campaign resources to give them sort of the biggest bang for the buck.
Since this is an election within a party, picking the nominee for president of, in this case, the Republican Party, the Democrats were not sure yet if there will be a caucus or an open primary in Michigan next year. But do the leaders of the state party and also the Republican lawmakers in the legislature have to be careful that they are not favoring one candidate, or at least not appearing to favor one candidate over the others for the Republican presidential nomination?
You know, these decisions that are being made now have tremendous implications for who ultimately wins the nomination. But we don't know now who is going to stand to benefit the most from these changes. Sometimes it's relatively clear cut. So, you know, for instance, this is ancient history, but in 1992, Zell Miller was the governor of Georgia. He thought Bill Clinton would make a good president, and so he almost single-handedly moved Georgia's primary to a time that it really benefited Clinton. And it kind of propelled him to the Democratic Party's nomination.
And because there had been some problems for Bill Clinton that probably kept him from winning New Hampshire, the story about an extramarital affair and the draft card all came out in the early primaries. Some people looked back on that Georgia win and said without that, or if it had come 2 weeks later, it might have been too late for him.
Exactly. That only works, though, if Bill Clinton is the only Southern Democrat in the field. If there are other Southern Democrats and Georgia moves its primary early, it might split the vote, might not have any difference, might not help the candidate that you intend to help. And I think that's kind of the case now. My guess is that folks in Michigan are looking at the field and saying, gosh, what we'd really like is a particular type of Republican candidate to be successful. There's probably not complete consensus on what that type would be. And so any changes that we make to the rules now, either in terms of the calendar or in terms of delegate allocation, we want to make to try and increase the likelihood that we'll get the kind of candidate that we want. But it's really kind of a crapshoot in a lot of ways. And until we know exactly who the candidates are at that point in time, what the other states are that are contesting on that day or within, that time frame, it's awfully hard to say. I think you're right, though. If there is an appearance that they're trying to help any particular candidate, it increases the likelihood that things could backfire.
John Clark, thank you very much for your time.
Gordon, it's always a pleasure.
John Clark is a political science professor at Western Michigan University. You can find links to the stories on the 2016 presidential primary at WMUK.org.